now from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. How are you this morning? It's Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester. We've got you on a Friday here. Glad to have you with us. All the different ways you take in the program, whether it's listening to us over the air on KFH, watching us on our video streams on 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube, X, or listening to us on the Odyssey app or the iHeart Music app. We are glad to have you either way. A lot to get to today on the program. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
It's a busy day today. I know we got to do the formalities. How you doing? Good to see you. We have a lot to get into. It's a busy, busy show.
We do. Okay, of course, the Royals start their second half today. We'll get to that. The Open Championship is in well underway into round number two. We're going to have Eric Johnson, pal, golf, local golf guy, is going to come in, connect us, and chat a little golf with us. We'll get you ready for the NBC World Series coming up. Of course, you've got the TBT tonight here in Wichita, and then the bombshell yesterday, the Rashee Rice legal decision that dropped in. Really surprising, I think, just about everybody, maybe, but Rashee Rice, of course, he pleaded guilty to some stuff. So we've got it all coming for you. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company, locations East, West, Historic Delano, featuring a rooftop deck. Wichita Brewing Company, it's pizza and beer made here. We'll give away a little HTO later in the program as well. Scale of, you know, 1 to 10. How surprised were you for the Rashee Rice news yesterday, Tommy?
I'd probably put it at like a 9, an 8 or 9. I didn't anticipate that it was going to happen when it did. I knew eventually we would see it, but, I mean, I was fully prepared to play this season and have the entire season play out before having any kind of answer on this. And so it came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I'll put it at a 10. But, you know, with the caveat that we thought this was going to happen a long time ago, right? I think when there's nothing happening and you're trying to like figure out what you're going to do, and then you just don't hear anything, all you see is there's a court date set for what, January? And it's like, okay, well, I guess we're waiting until January. We had come to terms with the fact that the NFL was going to wait until the legal situation right. played out. That part we were like, okay, so this is going to be a delayed thing. And then the legal system, what I can't quite figure out is if something was scaled up more quickly than anticipated, because Rashee Rice, I think he had already pleaded guilty. So I don't know. I don't know enough about the ins and outs of that legal case to know why it came yesterday, but it came. And now Rashee Rice, if you missed the news, you probably didn't if you're listening to this show. But if you did, Rashee Rice says pleaded guilty to a couple of felonies and been sentenced now by a Dallas County judge to 5 years probation, 30 days in jail. Now, the 30 days in jail can be served anytime, so he didn't go to jail, but he'll at some point serve 30 days in jail. He's already paid a bunch of restitution. He's vowed to continue to do that to the victims. And now we wait for the NFL to come back and rule and suspend him for whatever number of games they're going to suspend him for. They certainly are. And that becomes a topic of great debate that we can get into, but there you go. You know, we've waited almost a full year for this. And the suspension is likely coming in 2025 as he gets healthy and reinserts himself into the Chiefs offense.
Yeah. You know, the NFL has shown time and time again that they wait for the legal system to play out before they make any kind of declaration on their end. And so that's what, honestly, we've been waiting for. We've been waiting for the wheels of justice to turn, for the NFL to then decide what they're going to do. And, you know, I've seen estimates anywhere between two games on the low end, which that seems extremely unlikely to me, all the way up to eight or maybe more games. That seems unlikely to me too. I think we're probably somewhere in the middle of that. You know, I've seen the number six float around a whole heck of a lot, but you know, time will tell. We'll find out what the NFL wants to do.
Yeah, we'll dig into that. I think that becomes a pretty interesting discussion. But we will get that and have that for, you know, for, I think we just gotta, you gotta really be realistic with that. And I think there's a lot of people that aren't being realistic with that. Perhaps maybe even the Chiefs aren't being realistic with that in the situation and what happened. And it's just, it's going to impact them this year. And have we already passed this threshold of time where we don't care about that anymore and only care about the football? Like, we're getting into that danger zone, but we'll get into that. We've got just a couple of minutes here. And then we get the Royals tonight, Miami. You know, one of these opportunities, you'd love to see him go down there and sweep. You know, you got to get at least two or three. We get back into that zone a little bit of what things are. I told Max we'd wait on this, but we can do this now. So the Royals yesterday made their first trade. Adam Frazier, Ken, a great Royals fan, left us a voice message on that. You can leave us voice messages through the Odyssey app. You hit a little microphone. Let's get Ken's thoughts on the Frazier trade as we get you through this last little bit, and then we'll dig more into Rashee Rice.
Good morning, gentlemen. What does Adam Frazier do with runners in scoring position? Sign the hordes of base runners stranded over the course of the first half of the season. Have a great day.
Let me just look here, Ken. I don't know off the top of my head, but that is a great point.
I mean, without even looking it up, I can't imagine he's worse than what the Royals have done throughout the season with runners in scoring position collectively.
310.
That'd be hard.
He's batting 310.
Yeah, that'd be hard to be worse than that. 310. I mean, that's solid. They need you know, somebody down the stretch that can drive in runs, and whether or not he's in the starting lineup or if he's you know, coming off the bench as a pinch hitter, there's value for that for sure.
The Royals, you know, we take a swing at what the Royals' season average right now with runners in scoring position is.
215.
229.
Okay.
So 315 is good. Now, I don't know what that means. You know, I don't know that that means they're going to just pull him up in that situation to hit. He is, I mean, he's a professional baseball player. He's a professional hitter. All the cliches you want to use for guy that will hopefully give you a productive out with runners in scoring position, that would be him. And I wondered yesterday, like, how much of what this trade means is directed at that exact issue. They know there's a guy out there that cost them almost nothing who is pretty good at doing that thing. I will call it average because I think his OPS is like 630, so just slightly below. But if his batting average is higher, that's okay because he's not a power hitter, so it's not totally fair. But we'll call it average. That's an improvement. And I, you know, where they place him in the lineup if could be meaningful to trying to solve that problem. But again, Adam Frazier is not going to single-handedly send the Royals to the playoffs. The entire team must get better and closer to what they do normally in that specific situation to get there. So good thought, Ken. One I actually had yesterday, and I'm glad you made me look it up because we just did. All right, we're going to get to Rashee Rice. Tommy, I need the address. Where do I send my man card in? I watched K-pop Zombie Hunters with my kids on Netflix, and I got about 9 K-pop songs from that movie in my head, and I can't stop like humming them and say I need to.
I'm not sure I really even know what K-pop is. How is, I know it's music, but
it's
is
like
it different than
Korean boy bands?
Okay,
like, yeah, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Now
there's
I do.
A movie okay. called K-pop Zombie Hunters.
Wonder how that
got
did
a
on,
lot of that music.
Wonder how that did on Rotten Tomatoes. I can't imagine
very well.
Did
it's
it
one
really?
Of the most popular movies what? In the country right now. Yeah, it's like taking the country by storm. Songs are catchy. I don't know how to feel about that. But you know, if you catch me humming in and out of breaks, that's it'll probably be some K-pop. Whatever that's worth. We'll come back, let's talk Rashee Rice when we return on Sports Daily.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here with you on this Friday as we are getting you ready for a big weekend. Back to action in Major League Baseball. We have the TBT coming to Wichita beginning tonight. We've got the NBC World Series on the horizon. Training camp in the NFL starts next week. And then we get a bombshell for the Chiefs with Rashee Rice. Before we get to that, I want to tell you that the Summer Concert Series is back at the Capitol Federal Amphitheater in Andover. It returns tonight with Big Fat Fun live on stage. Gates open at 6:30. Show starts at 8. Enjoy free live music, food trucks, and Friday night fun all summer long. Full schedule at kfhradio.com. All right, Tommy, we come back in. We get the Rashee Rice news. We set that up in the first segment. The situation, legally speaking, seems more or less handled. Again, 5 years probation, 30 days in jail. At some point during that 5 years for Rashee Rice, it can be removed from his record if he's a perfect citizen. He's very remorseful in his apology, has never, you know, backed away from the incident, even though he ran away from the scene, which is a serious part of this, which we'll get into, is very, very serious. I saw a lot of this yesterday, and I just don't want to get there of trying to compare this to other things when talking about how long he may get suspended. Well, you know, they only suspended XYZ for X number of games. Well, you know, nobody died. Well, you know, he did, you know, guys, people, we are very lucky. He is very lucky. We're not talking about a lot of people being dead. 120 mile per hour on a major highway that caused a pileup. Okay. Like that, just because nobody died doesn't make that less stupid. It was equally as stupid and lucky that something terrible didn't happen. This is a really big deal. This isn't the same as a player getting in a bar fight. It's not. And three felonies, right? He fled the scene. I think that he is doing all the right things, but this is a really big thing that happened. And I think time has desensitized us to it, just to be like, well, maybe I've seen, like, I saw the report yesterday, and I don't have any doubt in the report because the reporter is good, but the Chiefs expect maybe 2 to 4 games. How could you expect only 2 to 4 games on this? There was the initial thought early on in this that he might get half a season or more. Nothing has changed to bring that down. Like, I'll be surprised if it's not 6 at least. But maybe it's not. I just, like, it's so hard with the NFL, Tommy, because there's not typically precedent on this stuff. But let's not fall in the camp of downplaying what happened in this situation, please. Like, it's just, I can't do it.
I've got family that live in that general area in Dallas. I've been on that highway multiple times. I've been on that highway exactly where the accident happened at about the exact same time that accident happened. And you're spot on when you say it is a miracle that nobody died in that crash, because it's busy most of the day, if not all of the day. And the fact that, I mean, this happened like in broad daylight. This happened in the middle of the day. This wasn't an overnight thing, you know, 2 a.m., 3 a.m. Like, this happened like middle of the day. It is shocking and surprising that nobody died, and everybody's extremely fortunate, Rashee Rice included, that we're not talking about, right? We're not talking about, you know, much, 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 much worse situation. Here's the thing. If you want to do comparisons, and I've heard different comparisons, you shared one with me yesterday, one of our colleagues up in Kansas City, comparing it to, I think you mentioned the bar fight, Alvin Kamara, and, you know, that whole deal. If you want to compare this particular Rashee Rice situation to something else, you can compare it to the Henry Ruggs situation where he did kill somebody by doing nearly the exact same thing, driving well, well above the speed limit. Like, we're talking 100 mile per hour, if not more, speeds on a major highway, and Henry Ruggs killed somebody, is in prison now, and will never play in the NFL again. Rashee Rice is extremely fortunate that that wasn't the same outcome for him, because it very easily could have been. So I do agree with you. You can't compare it and the potential suspension to a bar fight or some of these other things that we see happen in the NFL from time to time, the personal conduct type stuff. It's a lot different than that. And, you know, so like I mentioned in the last segment, I've seen the, you know, expectations that the Chiefs think it's probably 2-4. I'd be surprised if it's anywhere close to that.
Yeah, and they can expect what they want, and that's fine. Like, they can expect 2-4. Maybe they have some information to think it's 2-4. Like, whatever. That's one piece of it. I just can't, like, I know everybody loves the Chiefs. We love the Chiefs. We love the Chiefs being successful. You know, it's a really fun team to follow with a bunch of really high quality individuals. Sometimes individuals make bad decisions. This was one of those times. But I'm not going to sit here and try and, like, it's not that it's justifying it. It's like it's trying to make light of it when talking about, because it might affect them on the field. This is, you know, this is a thing separate from anything else. It will affect them on the field.
And we can have that conversation. We should have that conversation. I've got thoughts on that situation about how it impacts the Chiefs and the football games and all of that. I think it's okay to have that conversation. I don't think by talking about how this impacts the football team and the football games, I don't think that minimizes the actual situation itself. Because I do think you can have both. I don't think that, you know, that there needs to be virtue signaling and, you know, well, we can't talk about football. We can't talk about how this impacts.
No, I don't agree.
I'm not saying you're doing that. I've seen people on social media be like, I can't believe that, you know, people want to talk about how this impacts the actual games. That minimizes the situation itself. Well, no, it doesn't. They're two different conversations. Yeah. And you can have both at the same time.
I just mean in the sense of a suspension. Let's not pretend like this wasn't a big deal, so he shouldn't get a lot of games just because he plays for the Chiefs and is really good. It's a very serious situation. Everybody's very fortunate. He probably should get a lot of games because that's like if you're the NFL and you want to prevent somebody from making the same decision, right? Isn't that the spirit of suspending players to begin with? You're trying to set an example and make it so nobody else wants to make that same bad decision. Okay, it's young people. I get it. We all make stupid decisions. We make plenty of stupid decisions, but there are consequences for our actions. His legal consequence has now been delivered. Now he's got to face his professional consequence. He's lucky because in a lot of places he'd be fired if he did something like that and he was public facing, quite frankly. So what does the NFL do? I think it's 6 minimum. It's hard because last year the general thought was that it was going to be a lot of games, like upwards of 8. Because the situation was so bad. Now it just like has time really dissolved that. I doubt it. Now, when it comes to the Chiefs and Rashee Rice missing those games, I mean, this almost identical roster made the Super Bowl a year ago without him. So they'll be fine. They drafted Jalen Royals. Are they going to be as good? Absolutely not. Is Patrick Mahomes going to do the things we've been talking about the last couple of weeks or I have and like lead the league in passing and go absolutely bonkers if Rashee Rice misses 6 or 8 games? No, probably not. I mean, that was a big part of it. Rashee Rice is really good. But I would also tell you that Worthy almost duplicated the things that we thought about Rice at the end of his rookie year that made him so exciting going into his second year and really to start his second year. He was good out of the gates last year before he got hurt. Worthy did all that same stuff at the end of last year too. So they got Kelsey back. Like, they're not going to be as good, but I still think they'll be fine. They'll be all right. And if it's not, if it is like the reporting has been that it's only a handful of games, then it's kind of a non-factor. Guys miss 2-4 games all the time.
I mean, I've seen a lot of panic from people on social media like, oh, this is going to really, really impact the Chiefs and what they do and potentially making another playoff run or championship run. I don't buy any of that. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, is the fact that the Chiefs made it to the Super Bowl a season ago largely without Rashee Rice. He was injured in week 3, and they were able to find a way to make it back without him, so they can still win games without Rashee Rice. Will they be as talented? No, but they found ways to win and get all the way to where they wanted to be, ultimately, at the end of the season, with Rashee Rice on the shelf. That's number one. Number two, the wide receiver room is better, deeper, and more talented overall than it was a season ago. Oh, and by the way, healthier. If they can keep everybody healthy, Hollywood Brown should be healthy and ready to go for this season. And they didn't have him at all until the playoffs last year. So they've got him. Xavier Worthy isn't a rookie anymore, so he's not going to be learning the playbook. He's got a year under his belt now. And as you mentioned, he showed off his talent when Rashee Rice went down with that injury. Travis Kelce looks like he's in a position to be more of that receiver type guy this season than he was a year ago. And then, as you mentioned, Jalen Royals is now on that roster as another pretty exciting rookie. Juju Smith-Schuster is back. They're deeper, better, more talented, and healthier at that position. And so, yeah, you would love to have Rashee Rice for the entire season, but without him, they still have a significant amount of talent in that wide receiver room if everybody can stay healthy. And finally, my final point on this is that I think internally there ought to be a little bit of a sigh of relief from the Chiefs, regardless of what the suspension total number of games is, because they don't have this looming over their heads anymore. Once the suspension comes down, they don't have to worry about when is this going to happen? How do we game plan for it? It'll be done, over with. They can move on. They won't have that shadow following them around for however long.
I mean, if you're the Chiefs at this point, I would imagine you want this out of the gates, right? We want this in starting in week one, whatever it's going to be. Yep. Started in week one. We'll have him back. We'll have him back in time to get him ready for the postseason, and then boom. Austin says on YouTube also, Juju gets the ball a little bit more, a little underrated signing. I think it was appropriately rated, but yeah, I think Juju's going to be a part of it for sure. They didn't bring him back for no reason. The reality is the Chiefs they're going from an elite level of pass catchers, as good as there is in the league, to a good level of pass catchers, which they had last year until everybody got hurt. And then they had to go find DeAndre Hopkins and bring back Juju Smith-Schuster and do all that. That was because Rashee Rice got hurt and Hollywood Brown got hurt, right? They were dropping like flies. And now you're down to a rookie in Worthy, which he's not anymore. I will say, though, it does put you in a position where you could get back to that point now with one injury, right? We just talked about that. But if Kelce or Brown or Worthy, any of those guys, if they went down while Rice is suspended, now you're kind of back in a tough spot. We'll see how quickly Jalen Royals acclimates based on the time it takes for players and receivers to acclimate under Andy Reid. I wouldn't anticipate any large role early in the season, so I don't know that he's going to be much of a factor. And that's not based anything on him, but only on how long it typically takes guys with Andy Reid to get there, including Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy, by the way. So the line will be better. Almost has to be in pass pro, and the receivers without Rice are largely what they were to end the season last year. And remember, they did start to get better. The offense did start to get better as Hollywood Brown came back, and then Xavier Worthy kind of found his stride, and they got there eventually, even without Rice, because he was gone all year because of an ACL injury. He's going to be gone for some part of this year. I think they are as talented in that room as any team in football when he's there. And when he's not, they're still pretty good. But now they're thin. They are thin now. And that's probably the concern for me, is now what happens if somebody gets hurt. Now you're looking at a room that's a little less
I've got a little PTSD. I hope that they put Hollywood Brown in a bubble and they don't put him on the field at all in the preseason. I don't want to see him take a single snap in the preseason at all.
It's a different situation with him now too, because he's been there a full year.
Right.
So those things like that we argued about last year before he got hurt, like he knows the offense now. He's not coming into a new and fresh thing. So I'm with you. I'm fine if he doesn't play now this year because he's not new to the system. None of these guys are. I mean, somebody has to play. Royals needs to play.
And if I'm him, by the way, if I'm Hollywood Brown, I'm telling the Chiefs, I don't want to play in the preseason.
Because yeah, you can't do that.
Well, he re-signed for another year with the Chiefs because it's another prove it year. He didn't get to prove it last year. He wants to get another big contract with another team. So he's got to be healthy this year if he wants to parlay it into a larger contract.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably not going to just put him on total ice because it's not typically what the Chiefs do forever. Forever they've done that. I don't think they will.
They should.
I still like football players have got to play. But yeah, I get what you're saying. And now it is a different situation though. He knows the system. It's not, and he's not new to the offense anymore. But the lack of depth there now, it takes a hit with Rice and whenever he's gone. Don't you think this comes before the season starts? I mean, that was all the indication from all the different reporting yesterday is that the league would like to move pretty quick on this. Nothing's changed legally. What does the league still need to review now?
Yeah, I think it will come pretty quickly. And you know what? If you go back to when he went down with that injury, when was that, week 3 or week 4? I remember our conversations at that time was, hey, Chiefs fans, prepare to be without Rashee Rice for a long time. Because at that point it was, torn ACL, he's out for a while, going to be gone the rest of the year. And then, oh, by the way, there's a chance that he could be suspended. So he could be healthy, come back, or almost come back, be ready to come back, and then the NFL suspends him for however many games. I remember that being the conversation at the time. And then when we didn't hear anything forever and ever and ever, it was like, well, maybe it won't come in the 2025 season. But now it's kind of back to that original thought of, he's out for quite a long time with that knee injury, and then that just rolls right into a suspension.
Which is the case. Now, we'll see how long it goes. Maybe the reporting is right, and the Chiefs are right, and it's a small suspension. And
would you be disappointed in the NFL if it was a 2-4-game suspension?
No, I'm not going to be disappointed in it. I don't know. I don't want to downplay the situation. But if they came out and suspended him for 4 games, I'm not going to say I'm disappointed. I do think there are so many things that go into that. I don't know them. And without talking to them about it, I don't have a problem with being harsher on somebody who has a malicious intent to go hurt somebody, which was not the case in this situation. It was a really stupid thing. But I don't think he was like trying to cause a wreck, whereas like, DV, you're trying to hurt somebody. You're trying to instill fear. Even the bar fight thing, you're actively trying to hurt somebody. So if the NFL values and wants to come down harder on that, it's not going to make me angry. I just would be surprised. But I don't know their reasoning. I don't have their reasoning in front of me. I'm not in that room. I don't think they're sitting there thinking, oh man, we don't want to, we sure have the Chiefs on TV a bunch. We probably shouldn't suspect like that. You'll hear that kind of stuff, but no, it's not any of that. No, I'm not going to be disappointed. I think it was a really stupid thing that he did. I think he's really, really lucky. I don't want to downplay that, but I also don't know how the NFL weights some of this stuff. If they go through their process and they determine 2-4 games, okay, fine. Like, whatever. Like, we'll all move on with it. Like, it is what it is. We'll get back to Rashee Rice in the second hour. If you missed any of the beginning parts of our conversation, you can catch it on the Odyssey app. Royals get back at it tonight. I'm really glad baseball's back. That 2-day stretch after the All-Star break is always a tough 2-day stretch on the sports calendar. Seth Lugo gets at it tonight. I saw more predictions and everything. Maybe they'll trade with the Cubs and go strength for strength and find their bat and help the Cubs and do all these things. And boy, it's a fascinating one, but at the end of the day, the Royals just need Lugo to keep on keeping on and pitch really well here over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. With the way the Royals have played so far in the month of July, if they can carry it on after the All-Star break, then I think it becomes even less likely that they move Lugo. And I would be shocked if they did. They've got a pretty advantageous schedule, not only the rest of the way, but even right now, between now and the trade deadline, going to Miami. Miami's not a great team. They can get 2 of 3 on the road, and I think the expectation should be that. And then if you can sweep them, even better. But at that point, you're that much closer to 500. You would like to think that if you go 2 of 3 in this series and maybe even sweep the Marlins, then you should gain some ground, hopefully, in the wild card race. So as that relates to Lugo and the trade deadline and all of that, I think it's more and more unlikely that they make a move with him, because I feel like the Royals believe that even with the roster as it is now, that they can make a playoff run, and they're going to be probably they're going to add as opposed to subtract, you would think, before the trade deadline.
Yeah, they already have, right? They've already answered that question to some degree. They went and they brought Adam Frazier back, so they've already added. And again, like, I don't want to downplay that. I don't want to downplay making that move. It's a move. It's money. It's salary. It's, you know, trading away a player that probably could be a bench guy, rotational guy with all kinds of control. Like, it wasn't nothing. That was an addition. They went and they made an addition to the roster. So they don't forget that. Don't forget that they called up Jack Caglione way too early. Again, I think they should have. Don't forget that they've added Rich Hill and Dallas Keuchel for depth and all these things. Like, they're making aggressive moves. They have been all season long. Nothing has backed off of that. We just have to see if they think that their record's going to indicate doing it. There are a lot of teams, Tommy, right now that have essentially the same record that are perceived sellers, that are publicly making themselves sellers. The Rangers just traded away Dane Dunning to your Braves. Dane Dunning's handy. I can't figure that one out yet. But there are teams that are positioning themselves to sell that are in the same spot. The Royals are not doing that. The Royals are, by all accounts and by what we see with our eyes, telling us, hey, we want to be aggressive here. So I don't know what would, you know, outside of just an absolute catastrophe, as JJ Piccolo has told us, we're not going to let individual games dictate what our plan is here. I don't know what's going to change that before the deadline that's a realistic outcome. I think that they want to be moderately aggressive here.
It goes back to what we talked about a little bit yesterday with the Adam Frazier trade, that the trade itself, by itself, doesn't indicate a major move for the Royals. Like, that's not a groundbreaking, earth-shattering trade that the Royals made to acquire a guy like Adam Frazier. However, I mean, I do think that there is veteran presence and leadership and clubhouse and all these different things that are intangibles that Frazier brings back to the Royals. And they clearly liked what he did a season ago in that regard with them. But it's a depth piece. But from a bigger picture view, I think you can draw some conclusions from that Adam Frazier trade. I think it shows that the Royals, they want to add. They want to show that they are, you know, being aggressive, even if it's just moderately aggressive, leading up to and at the trade deadline. I think another thing to keep in mind with the Adam Frazier trade is that whether or not they go and acquire a big bat or they make a major move, they're willing and open to improving in the margins. JJ Piccolo said as much, that the depth was really important. And when you look at the guys that they've had on that roster, where they've been, you know, the players that are pinch hitters or their platoon guys, or they come in and provide depth, they haven't been very good. And there have been a lot of them. They cycled through a lot of those players over the course of the season. Frazier does provide a little bit of consistency there. And him being able to be somebody that can be called on and relied upon in versatile situations, while by itself his stats don't jump off the page at you, he does provide value in a lot of different areas, in those margin areas that a lot of times people don't, that they don't look at when you're trying to overall gauge the success of a team. I do think that it tells you what the appetite is for the Royals to continue to add before the trade deadline.
Well, that's a good, I think we're talking about two different things though. What's the appetite to add more and what's the appetite to not sell, I think are different. I don't think they have an appetite to sell right now. Again, Lugo is a total, like, all the conversations we're having right now, we have to take Lugo and set him to the side, because his situation is totally different than becoming a quote unquote seller, because of the contract situation he faces and because of what he could potentially return. I think we have to separate him from everything else. everything else, I don't think they have any appetite to sell right now. I think the appetite to add in the margins, as you mentioned, is probably quenched now with the Frazier move. I don't think there's anything coming down the pipeline at the moment. Again, could be totally wrong about that. But I think that they think that they're good enough. And I think that if they play well, they're good enough for sure. They're not a roster on paper that we look at and be like, yeah, they really need XYZ outside of a power bat in the outfield, of course, which that doesn't grow on trees. That's like saying we need an ace starting pitcher, right? That ain't easy. That's not, you know, you don't just stumble into those things. You're going to have to pay a price for that. I don't think they should be ready to pay a price for anything yet. I think they should let the guys they have who are, until the last, you know, 3-4 weeks, have largely underperformed this year. Let them try to find their groove as they began to do in July. And they're going to win a whole bunch more games if they don't add another anything to the roster.
Yeah, I don't even know, like, in the terms of the selling conversation, I don't even know, outside of the Lugo situation, which you did, I agree with you, completely different than anything else. I don't even know who else the Royals have on the roster that they would even entertain moving. And I don't think they should. I mean, I don't think that there are players on that roster as it stands right now that they should be like, yep, we're going to put them on the trade block and we're going to shop them around to see what we can get. Guys that are on the big league roster right now, you know, they, of course,
you've got Mark Canna, Taylor Clark would be an interesting name. And then Lugo's of course got his option. I think that's it. There aren't very many.
Yeah.
Everyone else is in arbitration. Luke Maley is an outright free agent. Everybody else is either in arbitration, has options, or can be extended, with the exception of Lugo, who can opt out. I don't know if Lorenzen's is a player option. He can, but he's his next year anyway. That's it. They don't have a lot coming off the books. So there aren't a lot of players they can run out, which is good news for them too, because it means that they bring all this back next year. And I still like all this on paper. I know they haven't performed up to what we thought, but I still like what this team is on paper. They just have to play better.
That's easier said than done.
Of course it is.
I do think the pressure is a little bit on, obviously, on JJ Piccolo, because he's the architect of this roster. And I don't disagree with you that on paper, it should be a better performing roster than what it has been. They should be an over 500 ball club right now. They've not delivered at the plate. They've been picked up by really good starting pitching and a good back into the bullpen. But on paper, at least that lineup should be better than what it is. And so if you don't, there are a couple of different options here. JJ Piccolo can be aggressive to go and find reinforcements in that lineup, or you can stand pat and you can say, on paper, this lineup looks really good and we need them to perform and deliver. If they don't, and if you go into next season, for example, and it's more of the same, then it's a different conversation. Yeah. And the pressure is on JJ Piccolo's shoulders to say, look, like, outside of the core, like the Bobby Witt Juniors and the Salvador Perez's of the world, this lineup overall is not working, and there's a big body of work that it's not working. We need to make some moves. We need to try to maybe try to tear it down and try again. So this year is going to be different than next year is, for sure, in that it wouldn't be overly surprising if they didn't make any major moves and they just kind of were quiet.
I think that that's where we're headed most likely. I would have confidence in that scenario too, by the way. If it doesn't work out in the offseason, Jonathan India gives you confidence that they can go do that. They went and identified a problem this offseason and very aggressively addressed it with Jonathan India. They can go do that again in the offseason. They just can't do it right now because you pay too premium a price right now to go get a highly what you think is going to be impactful bat to do a specific thing. But if you give them the entire offseason to go identify a power hitting left fielder, they can go do that in the offseason. I think that the Noah Cameron piece of this makes their job easier, because I think the expectation has always been that they're going to lose Lugo. So Noah Cameron slides in. You don't have the hole in your rotation. Lorenzen's on the books for next year. So, like, it's not a monumental task in the offseason to go find one thing that they need. otherwise, they're pretty much set, right? The bullpen's all back. They get Harvey back, all these things.
By the way, how about this? This comes from FanGraphs. I just read this, that the Royal corner outfielders, we're talking left field and right field, collectively, all of them that have played in those positions this year have combined for a negative 3.8 war. And so the team conceivably would be over 500 if they had just even had average, like a league zero average. War, just a league average left fielder and right fielder. Four wins. The corner outfielders are responsible for the Royals not winning. They'd be an over 500 ball club without them.
Does that surprise you?
No, it does. I mean, I think the total number, like the negative war, almost negative four, that does surprise me a little bit.
That's pretty high.
Yeah,
pretty
high. You think?
Players. Again, Cags is out there. That was always a risk to bring him up too early.
I mean, he's got a negative one war right now.
A risk that I think is still the correct decision. But that's what I mean. Like, the margin's there for improvement. It's hard to imagine him getting worse. Tommy's been very unlucky. He's probably going to get better. That's going to make the offense better. So don't get impatient, Royals fans. We got 2 weeks of baseball here before any decisions have to be finalized. We'll come back. Coming up, we'll talk a little golf with Eric Johnson. We return on Sports Daily. All right, welcome back in, everybody, to another hour of Sports Daily. We've got some interviews coming up for you in this hour. We will get more on the Rashi Rice situation. We'll get you ready for a weekend of baseball. It's all on tap. What's on tap? Brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company, locations East, West, and Historic Delano. Featuring a rooftop deck, Wichita Brewing Company. It's pizza and beer made here. Tommy, let's talk a little golf.
Man, I'm excited. Looking forward to have Eric Johnson here on the program with us on this Friday. Eric, we had you on during the Wichita Open. We figured, you know what? You know quite a bit about golf, or at least you act like you know a lot about golf. Figured it'd be a good idea to bring you in maybe weekly here for a while to talk about the world of golf, not only in Wichita, but across the world, because we've got the Open Championship going on right now. Welcome into the show, Eric.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Yeah, so we're good. Open Championship golf going on right now. We're in round number two. The lefty Brian Harman making a run, the past Open Champion.
He had to say lefty.
I'm a lefty. Come on. Yeah, I'm a lefty. So he's taking the lead now. He's 7-under right now, 5-under on the day. Eric, you know, he's a guy, Brian Harman is, that knows how to win major championship golf overseas. He did it a year ago. What do you think of his game overall? I mean, he's a small guy, but he hits the ball a long way.
Yeah, he's tiny, but he's pretty compact with everything, so he gets it done. The Georgia guys, they just know how to play. I don't know what it is over there. I mean, Harris English, too, another bulldog, and he's in there. And so I'm pretty excited about the old Terrell Rampage hat and being on the leaderboard, which means we get to watch him all weekend. But it looks like Bryson's trying to make a little run.
And it wouldn't be a leaderboard, by the way, without Scottie Scheffler, you know, up there as well. I mean, and Jacob, you and I talk about it all the time as far as betting is concerned. I mean, Scottie Scheffler has got to be the prohibitive favorite. I mean, every single tournament that he plays in.
It's hard to make any money with Scottie Scheffler anymore.
Well, yeah, you don't get good odds. But I think even as we look at this major tournament, we all start there. He feels as close as we've had since Tiger to, all right, check the leaderboard, where's Scheffler? And it drawing the general fan probably to the attention. So I would ask you, what is he, 5 strokes off right now? 5 strokes off kind of early on in round two. Is that too much for him in this kind of tournament and this kind of course to go make up the ground with 2.5 rounds to play left?
No, I mean, like, he's been there for 2 weeks. He's ready. He's ready to go. And you know, I thought his interview was pretty good when he said, you know, I didn't come over here to just warm. If I wanted to come over here and play around and do that, I'd go play some fun courses, but I'm here to prepare and win. So yeah, 5's not that bad. I mean, there's guys at 5, a couple guys at 5, a couple guys. Max Gracerman's already a couple under through 3, so it appears to be out there for him today. I don't know. I haven't looked to see what the forecast is over there, but you know, over there it can get gnarly quick.
Yeah, it changes all the time when you're playing in the Open Championship. I want to go back to something you just mentioned in the interview that Scottie Scheffler had leading up to this tournament. I don't know if we've seen a golfer before Scottie Scheffler be as reflective and kind of deep as he is, and talking about, you know, just like what he's chasing and why he's doing it and, you know, the gratification and all of that. I've been trying to rack my brain to think about, you know, like, were there other golfers that were as consistently real on the podium, you know, talking about different things as Scottie Scheffler? What was your takeaway from all the words that he said going into this tournament?
I mean, there is like that 5 minute clip where he talked about his family and perspective and all that. And then when I watched it, I was like, that is 180 degrees opposite of what Tiger would have done.
Yeah.
So it kind of tells you the difference of where the culture's going. And I read an article where someone said, that is exactly what Rory McIlroy needed to hear. Like, Rory should have said that a year ago, but he just couldn't bring himself to do it. Now Scotty said it. So I don't know, maybe it frees Rory up, but I thought it was cool. I mean, the guy's he's a family guy and he's sticking to it. So nobody's going to change him. So
he's also the best golfer in the world. Looking at the odds as he gets ready to be off soon, like 5 minutes, maybe.
Yeah. He's
2-1.
Oh my gosh.
Right now, if you want to bet Scottie Scheffler to win this tournament, 4 strokes off the lead, he's 2-1.
Right.
So have fun with that. Nobody's taking that action. What is it? What is the difference? Why does this tournament, which I call the British Open stubbornly, why is it so much different when we watch it than what we get on this side of the pond?
You know, I was thinking about that this morning, and like, one thing I really would have loved to seen is Sam Stevens get in. This is like fall Kansas golf, which he's really good at. It would have been fun to see how he played. It's a different thing. I mean, it's wind, it's moisture. The greens are by no means as fast as what they're used to playing. They're undulated. So, you got to think your way around it. And that's why guys like Zach Johnson and Brian Harman are so good at it. You don't have to be the bomber and you don't have to go full Bryson, obviously. If you're hitting it out there and you don't know where it's going, it's going to be penalizing. So it's a good test. I like it.
Talking to Eric Johnson here this morning. Eric, we had gone back and forth, you and I did, about whether or not we should call you our golf insider. And I'm cool with it. I think Jacob's cool with it. You didn't really want, you know, I think we should call you the golf insider here on Sports Daily, because you're so connected to the game of golf here in Wichita. Obviously, we know you, Jacob and I do, out at Crestview Country Club. You're right. The major driver in the Augie Navarro Pro-Am. You coach golf at Capen. And then also, you've got Swing 365 here in Wichita. While we've got you for a couple of minutes, if you were just kind of giving an elevator pitch to somebody who has not heard of Swing 365 Golf here in Wichita, what would you tell them?
Well, hopefully my wife's not listening, because she hates this analogy. But I tell the guys I talk to, it's if you wanted to build a man cave in your basement and be left alone or whatever, that's what we built. So it's 1,500 square feet. It's got swivel chairs. It's got couches, a couch. It's got a bar top. It's got 2 75-inch TVs. It's got a full swing simulator system. The screen's 10 by 16. You know, it's semi-dark. You guys have been there.
We have.
You know, so,
yeah, you were kind enough to grant us a little access there. I went in. I'll tell you what I did. The Rangers were on the West Coast. So I watched baseball. Instead of sitting on my couch watching baseball, I was swinging golf clubs and playing a simulator while watching baseball. After my kids went to bed, it was great.
Right. So we're open 24/7. There's no staff in the building. It's all remote and T-sheet, and just ask guys, you know, keep it like it's yours. You're a private member. But yeah, you can go in, you can play, you know, there's 50 some courses on there, all the TPC courses. You can just practice, hit some balls, sit down, have a beverage, get back up, hit some more balls, watch some TV. So it's membership based, so you're in there by yourself. There's no one, you know. I respect the guys that are doing it, you know, the shot suites and the other guys. This is just a little different deal. Some guys don't want to practice and fine tune in a group setting. So that's the great thing about it.
I'll tell you what I did yesterday. I had a little bit of time over my lunch hour, and the Open was on, and I went over there. I watched the Open, had a little lunch, and I played 9 holes at Prairie Dunes. Which, you know, you can't usually do. And so that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. We've actually got a couple guys that are members that will they actually order or pick up lunch, and they'll meet up there like from noon to one and just hang out. They don't even swing a golf club. So it's, as a member, it's your place. You can have with it what you want to do with it. So yeah, that's what we intended. I think that's where our kind of private play and private practice comes. And, you know, Jacob's wife or your wife can go in there and just hang out and read a book. We've had wives just sit in there and read a book and drink a bottle of wine while their husband practices. So you can get a couple members in there. You can play for, you know, your allotted time each. So
my wife would start asking, well, why didn't you hit that one good? What were you doing with that one? That would be a disaster. But an option
for sure. It's on the table.
It's a good date night. I've learned that there's some good date nights happening in there. So I've met some wives that are excited that, hey, we can hang out and it's a good time. So,
well, before we let you go, Eric, real quick, we've got about a minute left. If you had to pick right now, who's your winner for the Open? Do you think Scheffler can get it done across the pond and come back? Do you think that a guy like Brian Harman or Terrell Hatton, there's a long way to go, but if you had to put a name, who would it be?
I mean, I'd really like to see Justin Rose, but just for the old guys. But, man, I don't know. I think McIntyre or Hatton are playing pretty good. Hogard twins are playing pretty good too, but I mean, you just can't count Scheffler out. I mean, you can't. He's got to be in the mix somewhere, right?
8.5, 12.5 to one on those two guys you just mentioned.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what Rose went to. That was my one.
He's way down. He's way down. And Harris English just doubled, I think. Oh. So
good. But there's lots of good golf going on. I mean,
they're scoring.
Yeah, there's the Kansas AM's going on up in Topeka. A lot of Wichita guys still in that. So I've been kind of watching that after I missed the cut and came home. So yeah, it'll be there's some Crestview members duking it out today, Cooper Schultz and Colt Farrow. So
Tommy and I will be duking it out at Crestview later this afternoon.
How about the trees? Have you guys seen this?
We have.
We're about to get out there and look today.
I think it looks great.
I hope so. I hope so. I hate cutting down trees. Makes me nervous anytime, just because I came from a place that didn't have them.
Yeah, well, I think once you get out there, you'll see like, oh, that tree was kind of messed up. So the
Eric, visual of it. We appreciate it.
Yeah, guys,
we'll do this on Fridays. Looking forward to it.
All right, see you later.
There goes Eric Johnson. We'll come right back. We'll talk a little more about this Rashi Rice situation and the other headlines around the sports world. Don't go away.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in here to Sports Daily. Glad to have you. We promise no kiss cams here on the show. Could get you into. Have you? I don't know how you would know.
I have. I love those things that just unite the entire world. Yeah. Doesn't matter your politics, doesn't matter your beliefs. It's just, something happens. The last time that happened was the Pope being American. That united everybody. And then now it's Coldplay and a kiss cam. That was the next thing.
We're going to all come together and agree that it's okay to poke a little fun at, and I do feel bad for the family, but A lot of stuff going on in the world when a billionaire gets caught with his HR director side piece at a Coldplay concert, called out then by Coldplay on camera. We can all agree that's pretty funny.
There's not a lot of things better than that. And I mean, it's hilarious. I do feel bad for the wife, you know, the family, yeah, sure. All of that for sure. Absolutely. But in a bubble by itself, it's pretty funny.
It's good memes. It's good comedy. All right. Let's get back to Rashi Rice. Not comedy. Very serious situation. Gets a step that I gotta tell you, man, of all the things out of like coming off the top rope, like we had all just sort of come to terms with and conceded that this thing was going to be handled this upcoming offseason and a problem next year. I would tell you this, though. If we're looking big picture for the Chiefs, and I don't know how many games he's going to be suspended or anything else. If we're looking at this big picture from the Chiefs, wouldn't you rather have him out part of this year than part of next year? When things are a little more uncertain with, you know, they were able to run it back. We know they have the depth to withstand it this year. Next year, they're probably not going to have Juju. They're probably not going to have Hollywood Brown. They're probably not going to have Travis Kelce. They probably, you know, like, I think if you were going to take your pick, it will be more manageable. And I know this year is right in front of us, so we're focused on it. But that would have been a pretty big, that would have been tough next year.
Yeah, I think the difference is the word, the difference in the words manageable and desirable. It's definitely,
none of it's desirable.
It's definitely more manageable, I think, knowing who you've got in the wide receiver room this year. I also think, you know, the Chiefs, I don't know if they had any indication dating all the way back to the draft that this was going to be resolved legally.
Same thing.
Now, before this season starts. But at the time, I remember when they drafted Jalen Royals, I'm like, man, they're going with another wide receiver early in the draft. And at that time, I didn't connect the dots on, hey, maybe they know that the legal situation with Rashi Rice is going to wrap up during this offseason, and more than likely, Rice is going to serve the suspension this season, and they'd like to have another reinforcement as a wide receiver out of the draft. Maybe they knew that. Maybe they didn't know that. I've got no knowledge one way or the other. But if they did know, it obviously makes a lot more sense that they took a guy like Jalen Royals fairly early in the draft.
I've wondered it too. I've wondered it because we got, you know, an indication that they may have an idea of how much the suspension is going to be. It's strange to me that they already have some expectation. It's also strange to me that Rashi Rice and his legal team wouldn't have known this was coming. You know what I mean? Like, that also seems unlikely. I don't think they woke up yesterday and got a call from the judge or a letter, and it was like, oh, hey, by the way, you've got 5 years probation and 30 days in jail. Doesn't work like that. So they had to have known this. And so, yeah, how long have they known it? How realistic has it been? That made me do the same thing. I was like, well, you know, they did take Royals, and it didn't feel like they needed a wide receiver. So I don't know. I mean, and maybe that's then where we see some of the reporting yesterday that they have an expectation on a number of games. Maybe this process has been playing out all along. It's one of those, certainly if people aren't asking about it, they're not going to talk about it. But we had all just kind of been like, all right, well, I guess they're going to handle this in January when he goes back to court. So yeah, they could have been preparing for this for sure. But again, like, and we're not talking about this. We already did that, right? It's a very serious situation. Don't downplay it. It's not worth your time. It's a serious situation. We'll see what he's suspended for. Tommy, he was outstanding in the three games he played last year against the Ravens, the Bengals, the Falcons. He had 29 targets. He had 24 catches in those three games, almost averaged 100 yards a game, and had a couple of touchdowns. Was as good as any receiver in football through the first 3 weeks last year. He is, and I've seen some of the videos from him at camp. Dude is moving fine. He is uniquely talented. I don't want to pretend like it's just like, oh, next man up, replacement value. They'll, you know, I think they certainly lose something with Rashee Rice because he's really, really, really good, and he has a very obvious connection with Patrick Mahomes. But they will be equipped to handle it because they did last year. He got hurt. They, you know, and I don't think they certainly, because they weren't a premier offense most of the season last year, want to come out and be like, oh, well, we'll just go back to the offense last year. I don't think anybody wants that either. But they've added to that offense through Hollywood Brown, through better left tackle play, hopefully, through maybe a little different role for Travis Kelce and some other things. So it's going to be okay. It really, to me, it feels like just get this over with. Honestly, now, best case for me, the Chiefs on the field, is to just have this right out of the gate. Better than having it next year, better than just get it over with. And then when Rashee Rice comes back after a suspension, they can finally proceed with him on the trajectory to being a really, really good receiver that he was on.
They adjusted and adapted on the fly a season ago with Rashee Rice going down with an injury at week four, and then didn't have him for the remainder of the season. They also didn't have Hollywood Brown in that moment as well. They adjusted and adapted with no preparation time. They go out and they sign DeAndre Hopkins as a stopgap to try to have an additional wide receiver. They didn't have anybody. Like they were not in a good position, and they still found their way in the Super Bowl. They now, if the Chiefs can get this punishment from the NFL sooner rather than later, then they should have a good amount of time, and I'm sure that they're already game planning for it, and they probably have been. What life without Rashee Rice looks like, and having a longer time to prep and plan for it with presumably a healthy Hollywood Brown, with Xavier Worthy, Jalen Royals, Juju Smith-Schuster, etc. Oh, and Travis Kelce also. They won't have to try to adjust on the fly. They won't have to try to adjust in the moment. They've got training camp. They've got preseason. Before we get into the regular season, they've got time. If they can get this punishment settled and done and ready to go, and Rashee Rice just knows he's going to serve that punishment right away, then they conceivably would have enough time to game plan for it. So I do think it's a different situation than a year ago, and a better situation for the Chiefs than what they encountered a year ago when Rice went down with that injury.
It's a better situation for the Chiefs too than a surprise midseason suspension. Certainly better situation than a surprise postseason suspension of some kind. And I do think a better situation than having to deal with it next year when his salary is on the books against the cap and he can't play. So, like, it's not a good thing that any of this happened, but when we separate the very, very troubling and dangerous and all the things that are the reason he's going to get suspended, when we put that on one side and have two different conversations from a football perspective, I don't think this is the worst situation for the Chiefs. He'll get suspended for the amount of games he's going to get suspended for. That would happen at any point. So again, I still think it's going to be like six, but it could be less. I could be totally wrong on that. It's the timing of it is probably about as good for the Chiefs outside of this dragging into, you know, 2-3 years from now, which was never going to happen. Like, I'm not sure they could have timed it any better to be prepared for it anyway than they will be right now. I'm just going to pull up their schedule.
You better believe also, by the way, that the Chiefs and whether it's Brett Veach or, you know, somebody else, it may have gone all the way up to like a Mark Donovan. I'm sure that they have reached out to the NFL now that the legal proceedings are done. I'm sure that they've initiated conversations with the NFL saying, can we expedite this? Let's get this done. We want to get this done now. Because, you know, if that's what the NFL has been waiting on, it is more advantageous to the Chiefs to get the suspension in place and for Rice to serve it right away.
So the Chiefs open, just looking at their schedule, at Chargers, of course, on that Friday, Eagles at home, Giants on the road, Ravens at home, Jags on the road, Lions at home. That's their first six. Obviously, some of your toughest games on your schedule are in there, three of them. Also, two of your easiest games will be on the schedule at that point. They're both road games. So it's fine. I don't think we have to get to that point, though, with this team this year. I also don't want to downplay, like, Could him being gone the first anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks impact their chances at home field advantage? Oh, absolutely it could. You better believe it could. Could he be the difference in a win and a loss early in the season? Absolutely he could. Does that mean maybe the road goes through Baltimore instead of Kansas City? Sure could, because that they play them early in the season. So, you know, all of those things matter and could matter as we get ready to make like season predictions much later on, right? We'll have clarity, I think, on this before we do something like that. But does this impact their overall trajectory for the season? Yeah, it absolutely
does. I don't know if it will though. I mean, I'm not trying to downplay the importance of Rashee Rice because he is your number one receiver and he's got a connection with Patrick Mahomes, as you mentioned, and what he does physically, he's a gifted athlete, all of those different things. So I'm not trying to downplay his impact on the Chiefs and his importance to that roster, but remember, they didn't have him for the majority of last season and they still made the Super Bowl. And so, like, will it? I mean, could it impact the trajectory? Absolutely. But will it? I'm not ready to say that because, especially knowing that that wide receiver room is deeper and better going into this season, even without him on the field, I almost think it's negligible. It could be negligible. It could impact. But, like, I think that there's a scenario where they have, like, if they had Rashee Rice the entire season, the path could still run through Baltimore.
No, it right? could, but like, him not being there when they play the Ravens could definitely have an impact on that at the end of the year. I just mean, like, he's their best receiver. Their ceiling is much, much higher with him on the roster. I say much, much. It's higher with him on the roster than with him out on the with him not being on the roster. Again, if you're the Chiefs, you don't really care. You just want him for the postseason. You don't care where the games are played. They won a Super Bowl 2 years ago on the road. They don't care. They'll go play anybody anywhere. That's what they do. They're not afraid of bad weather. They're not afraid of hostile environments. They just want Rashee Rice there at the end of the season when they're playing playoff games. The off the field part of it is terrible and not good for anybody. The on the field part of it, when you consider all the potential outcomes and scenarios, is certainly not going to be the worst for the Chiefs that it could have been. It could have been in the middle of the season. It could have been toward the end of the season. And to the original point, it could have been into next season, which I think would have been harder to manage than it will be this season. This timing is as manageable as it's going to get. Now we just have to see how long the suspension is. And again, back to the conversation we had in the last hour that we can rehash a little bit. We're going to make a commitment. I am right now, whatever the punishment is, to not try to compare it to other punishments for other things. This was a very serious crime. And I don't want to, if he gets 6 or 8 games, I'm telling you, Chiefs media is going to come out and you're immediately going to start seeing comparisons to other guys who have been in fights and done other things. That's what you're going to see. It's coming if that happens. And I'm going to make a commitment right now not to do that because it's a different situation and a potentially catastrophic situation. And the reason that it wasn't was good fortune, was divine intervention. I don't know. But when you're going 120 miles an hour, down one of the busiest highways in the world, making contact with other cars and cause a huge pileup and run away from the wreck for some reason instead of helping people, that is not nothing. It's a very, very, very lucky and serious situation.
The other thing I have to keep I keep going back to, I'm not trying to downplay the situation at all. And I understand where you're coming from and all of that. He was a dumb kid. Doesn't excuse it.
They're all dumb kids.
The consequences and the punishment and everything will be well deserved. I did a lot of stupid things when I was 24.
Absolutely.
23, 24. Did a lot of stupid things. So I have to put I have to put myself in that situation of like, would I have done that at 20? I probably wouldn't have done that, right? Like that's, I wasn't that stupid, but like
there's,
there are judgment things that when you're a kid and you have access to the kind of luxury vehicles and the kinds of, you know, all the different things that happen when you have money for the first time and you're a kid and you're like, I can't relate to that. I don't know exactly what I would do in that situation. So like, I'm not going to try to sit here and lecture the kid on like, you needed to do it in a better way. And he absolutely should have. He was a kid. He made a really horrible mistake.
I'm not casting judgment on Rashee Rice. I'm not. I did plenty of stupid stuff too. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the law says it was very serious. Felonies, things like that. Like, I'm not trying to sit here and make any public opinion about Rashee Rice. I've never met Rashee Rice. I made lots of stupid decisions. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is, yeah, he was a kid. It doesn't matter. It was a very serious situation.
It absolutely was.
Now is not the time to say, come on, league, you only suspended this guy for this long. Like, No. This was very dangerous. And the consequences are separate from what we think about Rashee Rice, because by and large, he's done all the right things since.
I mean, how many times in your youth did you make a decision or be involved in a situation that you look back on now and you're like, that could have been catastrophic. Lots. Like, there have been a lot of them for me where it's like divine intervention. Like, man, how did I not get 100%. Arrested, or how did I not get killed or seriously hurt?
And that's not what I'm saying, because consequences are very real. I mean, they are.
They are.
Even with those stupid decisions. So if I made lots of them and got in trouble, I'm not going to blame, you know, what the rules are for me getting in trouble. I got in trouble. I made a bad decision. He made a bad decision, and he's going to have to face whatever that is. But let's not get mad at the NFL if they're harsh in their penalty, not because he's a young kid and young kids don't make mistakes. Of course they do. Of course we all do. But because the situation was very serious, a lot of people's lives are forever affected, and they almost died. Like, you can't, if you're a league and you're trying to set values and set precedents for people to not make bad decisions, why do you ground your kids? Why do you punish your kids? It's not because you enjoy it. It's because you hope they don't do it again. Or you hope their little brother or sister doesn't follow up and make the same bad choice. Nobody likes it. It's not fun. You don't punish your kids for lying because you've never lied in your life. You punish them because you don't want them to lie anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to downplay the situation. I'm not. Because some other player got punished XYZ for some other thing that they did. We are joined now as we get ready for the NBC World Series by Katie Woods of the NBC World Series. Katie, you guys ready for this thing?
As ready as we're going to be, except I still need three teams to qualify. So once I have that, then we'll be ready to go.
You need Tommy and I to get it, to get the guys together.
I'll give you a call if we get to that point.
Okay, good. I hope that you don't.
Yeah. Nobody would like that.
We've got three leagues that are just really close, and so we're waiting to see who wins it.
Yeah, it's always such a fun environment and fun week and a half or 2 weeks of baseball. And definitely something that I know that the city of Wichita and the surrounding area just has always gotten behind, the legacy and the longevity and everything in the tournament. You guys are, you know, in a position now where definitely feel like that momentum is continuing to grow, and you've got so much support around the community. What has the planning been like getting ready for this year's tournament?
It's been fun. This has been a really busy year for us. You know, we're now an independent nonprofit. So that means we built a whole new board. We moved into new offices in Clifton Square. And then last year we brought back baseball around the clock. We have an Alaska team coming back. And so it is, I think, just a ton of great momentum and a lot of things that are new, but also a lot of things that people love from the past.
Well, a lot of things from the past, you know, baseball around the clock, you mentioned, a return to, you know, to a partnership to downtown Wichita, I think is something people are excited about. But I agree, it does kind of have this classic vibe to it this year that I think is welcome return for fans.
Yeah, I think there's so much tradition in it. And I think that a lot of it, for a while, it was kind of like, that's what we used to do. And now it's, how do we do that now and honor all that history and that tradition? And we just were looking, you know, the NBC uses red, white, and blue bases. And we looked back, and it looks like they've done that since at least 1975. So 50 years we've been doing red, white, and blue bases. What makes the NBC unique? And it's all about Wichita.
Yeah. And, you know, you get a chance to use, you know, multiple venues now around Wichita. Of course, X Stadium, it's been the home for what, the last couple of years, right? Just the permanent home for the NBC World Series. But championship baseball back downtown at Equity Bank Park. What has that development been like working with the team over there at the ballpark and the Wind Surge?
Yeah, it's been great working with the Wind Surge this year. You know, I think they really understand the history, or have come to really understand the history and the tradition of the NBC. I mean, the reason Lawrence Dumont Stadium was built originally was for the NBC World Series in 1935. So being downtown is a big part of the NBC history, and working with the Wind Surge to get that August 2nd championship night down there has been great.
What do we expect in baseball around the clock this year? It was good to see it back. What kind of reaction did you have to its return? What are your expectations for it now?
Yeah, we had, I think about 170 people who did it last year, not who survived, but who attempted to survive. And so I think the momentum's a lot bigger this year. So we're expecting that to be big and busy. And a lot of, you know, we started to kind of explain to people like summer camp. This is like your lock-in overnight camping. It's really family friendly. We've got prizes all night, games going on, arts and crafts tables. It's almost like summer camp. And so I think people have started to kind of go, okay, I get this. This is like camping in my backyard, but with prizes and baseball.
You know, baseball around the clock, as a kid growing up here in Wichita, I mean, that was such a big event every single year. And that's what you thought of when you thought of the NBC World Series. That was one major thing. But then the other thing, and you mentioned it a moment ago, Katie, with the Alaska team that is back. It was so cool to go to the tournament and see teams from California and Alaska. And it seemed like they were coming from all over the place to play in this tournament. And the fact that now there's an Alaska team back in the tournament, what has that been like?
It's been great. I mean, I do think Alaska is a big, that's just a name for people. And having the Gold Panthers back is great. And I think we've also got, like you were saying, teams from Seattle, from San Diego, from Santa Barbara. And then all of those players come from all over the place. Like last time I looked at the Foresters roster, I think they've got four players from the University of Texas who are going to be on their roster. So having players from across the country and these teams from across the country with their goal being to come play in Wichita at the NBC World Series, it's just, I think, speaks to what a big event this is, how special it is in that summer collegiate baseball world.
Well, let's talk about the business here. July 24th, this thing gets underway. It goes through August 2nd. People can get tickets. What is the best way to get tickets? What are the different ways people can get tickets, and what kinds of, you know, tickets are out there?
Yeah, so our tickets are all of our tickets are all day tickets. So some days, actually a lot of days, we've got four games a day. So all of our tickets are all day. Tickets start at $12. And that's for general admission, and general admission at, or $15 if you want the lower GA. So those are really our big price points, to make it where it's affordable for families to come in and be there the whole time. And we also are, partnering with Shields. We have a free kids club. So kids can sign up on our website, nbcbaseball.com, get a wristband from Shields, you know, one of those Live Strong bands, and then they're free for the entire tournament. Because for us, it's a really big deal to make sure that the next generation becomes NBC fans, and they get to experience it. They get to see all these players live and in action. So for a family, that's definitely what we recommend, is the kids club and then $12 tickets for mom and dad.
That sounds good. nbcbaseball.com. That'd be next Friday. You got a week here.
Next Thursday is opening day.
That's right.
I know.
It's next Thursday through. It's an adventure. Go do the all day baseball thing. Go
it's
do the
so much
it's
fun.
Baseball around the clock.
So give much fun.
Yeah, just to say you did. Just to say you tried it.
We can all do it once, right? All right, Katie. We appreciate it. Go get your tickets. NBCBaseball.com. It'll be here before we know it.
Thanks for having me.
There goes Katie Woods, the NBC World Series. Glad that event is getting back downtown. Glad baseball around the clock is back. It's starting to feel, you know, I think for some people, maybe what it felt like all those years, all the history of that tournament, all the great players that have come through. So glad to see it back. We're 6 days. 6 days away.
Man,
and we
it.
Got the TBT coming to Coke tonight. We go through this stretch, Tommy, of the All-Star break, those 2 days, and then it's just, it's boom, it's TBT, it's NBC World Series. Training camp starts next week. We'll have preseason football. Like we got preseason football in like 11 days, I think.
The Hall of Fame game is like the last day of July.
man, here we go. Here we go. Meanwhile, you and I are going to be out there hacking it a little bit. We're going to play our friends at Crestview Country Club. We're getting out there today. Eric Johnson mentioned those trees. I drove by yesterday and still saw some orange stripes. I know they'll still be doing the work while they're out there. What happens if we hit a tree that's being cut down? What are the rules on that, Tommy? I'm going to have lots of questions today. Play it as it lies, shooter.
Play it as it lies. That's what you got to do.
I had to do that. You remember the last time we played? I don't know what you would qualify that as. I think I got a tick. But I was in the high grass with my back up against a tree and hit it like 8 feet. Not taking that penalty though.
The best way to avoid that is don't hit it there.
Yeah. Hit it on the fairway.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know what? I'm going to try that today.
I think you should. Hey, by the way, while we're talking golf, we can't get through the show without the Friday Fit here on a Friday. I'm rocking the 3570 Golf Co. Shirt. This is the spicy lemonade shirt. You'll be able to see it up close when we're golfing out at Crestview today, but it's got great design, and that's all of the apparel designs from 3570 Golf Co. Embodies this part of the country, the heartland, all of that. You can check out all their selection of shirts and hoodies and head covers and pullovers and everything that they've got, 35x70golfco.com. If you use the promo code Tommy, you'll get 10% off your first order.
There you go. Which one is that one that you got on?
The spicy lemonade. It's got glasses of lemonade on it and some jalapeno peppers.
There you go. Spicy lemonade. That's pretty good. I like it. Yeah, their stuff is really cool. I still have my ball in that maroon shirt. It reminds me of my alma mater, the Buffaloes. It's a maroon shirt with buffaloes on it. What's holding me back? I don't know. All right, Tommy, we get baseball today with the Royals. We can finish there on the show. Series against the Marlins. We don't know the starters, technically speaking, yet. I don't think the Royals have officially put that out. We expect Lugo to go tonight against Sandy Alcantara, which is kind of interesting because there was a time where it's like Alcantara is going to be the best pitcher on the market. And I'm like, dude has like a 7.50 ERA. I don't know that there has ever been a more overrated pitcher than Sandy Alcantara. But that's who they'll go again. Watch him, you know, blank the Royals through seven. But he is here. Here is what he's given up in his last three starts, Tommy. Against, he's given up 7 runs in 6 innings, 5 runs in 6 innings, 6 runs in 5 innings over his last three. The two before that, he gave up 2 and 3 runs. He has crooked number. He has one start this year, one start where he hasn't given up at least 2 runs. And it's most of the time much worse than that. This is a gettable pitcher for the offense. They also, the Marlins, leave him in, right? They just leave him out there. Go score some runs. Now is the time.
This is the game that he would pitch a shutout through 7 innings or whatever, right?
I know it's coming, but man, like most overrated pitcher ever is Sandy Alcantara. I don't know why. Like I didn't intend ever? To like, go on a rant here. There were when the trade deadline stuff started coming out, he was being heralded. It is this highly desirable guy to go trade for. And I'm sitting here looking at Lugo further down in the, and I'm like, what is it with him that has everybody?
I think Alcantara,
so enamored?
I think people think that Alcantara has really good stuff. And I think generally speaking, he has pretty good stuff, but he's on a bad team. He doesn't get any kind of help. But I'm telling you what I think. People seeing him. I'm not saying I believe that because I do think he's overrated. I don't know if I would call him the most overrated pitcher of all time.
He's
like you just did.
He's got a 7.22 ERA.
You're right. He's overrated, but I don't think he's the most overrated ever. I think there are plenty of overrated pitchers in the history of the of baseball going back 150 years that I would put on that list ahead of a guy like Sandy Alcantara.
Well, he's not the worst pitcher that's ever pitched, but boy, is he. Valued highly. He was good early in his career. He had about a 3 or 4 year stretch where he was good. But to still pretend like
he's on a really bad
team. But a bad team doesn't mean anything to a 7.22 ERA. You can look at a win loss record, but a 1.50 whip and a 7.22 ERA has nothing to do with a lack of offensive support behind him. Anyway, this is not intended to be a Sandy Alcantara conversation. Most people out there don't care who Sandy Alcantara is. He's a pitcher that the Royals can go hit. He has not been good lately. He has not been good all year. and the Royals have an opportunity as they have hit the ball better in July. There is a little danger. Like, I don't like that this team hit the All-Star break when it hit the All-Star break, Tommy, because they were finally heating up. And now it's like, now you got to go take 5 days off. I hope that that doesn't impact the way they were swinging it in July. That's going to suck if so. All right, that'll do it for us. We're going to have more on this Rashi Rice situation soon, maybe as soon as next week. It'll be curious, Tommy, to see just how fast if the NFL had this locked and loaded. But we'll have that next week. We'll also have whatever the Royals do this weekend. All the games, you'll hear them right here on KFH. Tommy, I'll see you out at the golf course here in just a little bit.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And, you know, we've got Seth Lugo and Sandy Alcantara dueling tonight. We'll see how that matchup goes.
Thanks to Max. Thanks to Tommy. Thanks for Katie Woods of the NBC. Thanks to Eric Johnson, our new golf insider of Swing 365. We're looking forward to those conversations throughout the season. We'll see you all back here on Monday.